Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's episode 189. It's our second draft preview show. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from USA Today, part of the USA Today family. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, it looks like we're getting closer. More rumors, more stuff, and nothing seems to be real clear with anything. It still is a big mystery, although some local hosts have kind of as the draft knowledge comes out, it seems now that the trend for the Cardinals is, instead of trading up or standing pat and drafting a quarterback or not drafting a quarterback at all, that they're going to trade back, because we're going to cover the ground all the way around. We're going to cover everything that's a possibility, and then we nailed it when it happens.
That's right. That's the blogger expert MO right there. You start in February talking about the prospects they're interested in and that they'll probably have to trade up. Then you talk about the prospects that'll likely be there if they stand pat. And then as you get really close into April, just weeks away, you talk about trading back. And then that way you've covered all your bases. You've got the trade up scenario. You've got the stand pat scenario. You got the trade back scenario. And guess what? All you got to do is pull the audio from whatever happens right at during draft time. And man, you nailed it. So Jess and I are going to make sure we cover all of those bases again one more time before we get to it. But you know what? It's getting close. And I think we're starting to get to the angsty part of the draft season. People have their favorites now. We see this every year, and we start to see a little bit of attitude, if you will, come out in responses to articles, whether it's from you or I, Facebook comments, Twitter posts, or even blog posts in response to a blog you or I wrote. So it's just that time of year. That's what it is. It's that time of year where everybody's had more than enough talk. They're done with the talk. Really, we just need to get to, by the time this is aired, you know, 21 days or 22 days. We just need to get through these next 22 days, and it's just not happening fast enough. And so we're going to get more information on, well, the Cardinals really like Josh Allen, and then we're going to get more information on they've got their sights set on Mason Rudolph, but they feel like they can go back in the draft, and then we're going to be talking about how they want Vita Vea or you know, Maurice Hurst or whoever the flavor of the day is. So we're going to cover all the bases, and then we're going to nail the pick, because we'll have projected roughly 30 players into that slot, and we'll get one of them.
And although in fairness, we have hit on the last 2 years the actual pick that the Cardinals have. Now in terms of if you're listening for the first time, Seth is much more of a draft guy than I am. He has his circle in his community of draft evaluators, of media draft evaluators, Twitter draft evaluators. While I don't try to do that, my experience over the last few years covering the Arizona Cardinals, it's been about, I can sense a trend of the types of traits the Cardinals like in terms of ability, physical traits, and personality in terms of fit. So we kind of get a little different sides. That's the kind of perspective that we get for each other. My Cardinals-centric world, as it's been for the last many, many years in terms of covering football, I am no draft expert. I don't claim to be able to evaluate. I know what, like, when if I see college football, I like what I see in terms of play. I like motor. I like particular physical traits. But I try to translate that into a fit for the Cardinals. And if you've ever paid attention to the mock drafts, that the simulations, I don't mock a whole first round. I can't do it. I'm no good at it. But I do like running. I like running simulations. I like running simulations on the stuff that's out there. And so I try and play out scenarios and who's available, things who can play out. And then especially on and like round three and later, there's a bunch of players that I like potentially how they fit. And oftentimes it doesn't end up being that way. But every once in a while, there's one or two where I go, oh, okay, that makes sense. So, but this is our draft show. This is our second draft show. We already talked. So if you haven't heard it yet, go back to our show last week. If you haven't yet done it, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or any number of the other types of podcast subscribing services that you can find the show. Get it downloaded. Review us. Give us 5 stars. All that lovely stuff. But last week was one of our best shows in a long time, where we talked an hour and a half about quarterbacks in the draft. We gave kind of went over every single one, their pros, the cons, the scenarios in which the cons. It's a great episode. We're not talking quarterbacks tonight. We're talking offense, the offense of other skill positions, and just basically offensive side of the ball. We're talking receiver. We're talking tight end. We're talking offensive line, both tackle and interior. And we're going to talk a little bit about running back, even though there's not a big need there. And kind of how we're going to have to roll this around is we're going to talk about the players at the top, the players who the Cardinals might be interested in at the top of the draft, round two, round three, and then late round guys. You're going to hear a lot more from Seth in terms of comments and things. I'll have a question here or there, things I've read, things I've seen. And so that's kind of how we'll go with that. We'll start off, but there actually is a little bit of news coming from the Cardinals is they did sign a receiver. Bryce Butler, formerly he's a 5-year player, played for the Oakland Raiders. Came out of college in 2012 from San Diego State after a few seasons at USC, transferred to San Diego State, played for the Raiders, played for the Cowboys last season. He agrees to a 2-year deal. And so we'll start with that. Bryce Butler, how does he fit for the Cardinals? Is he a real answer at the position? And what can we expect? What do you know about Butler other than I when I was looking things up and I wrote a piece as, you know, receivers that the Cardinals can still target. I was looking for players who could be a value pick. I don't know how much he's going to be paid yet, but what does he offer?
Butler is a big, fast, athletic receiver, but he's a guy that, I mean, just in reality, and this isn't a shot at him, so I don't want anybody to take it this way, but he doesn't produce. I mean, you go back the last three seasons, 2015, he has 12 catches, but he has 12 catches for 258 yards. So literally over 20 yards of reception. 2016, a career high 16 catches, has a bit of a down year in terms of yards. 219 yards. That's still close to 14 yards a completion. And then he had 3 touchdowns that year, which is, I mean, that's impressive when you're talking about 16 catches, 3 of those are touchdowns. And then last year, 15 catches, career high in yards, 317, back up over 21 yards per reception and 3 touchdowns. So what you're looking at is a player kind of in the JJ Nelson mold, just a bigger version, right? Like he's not a guy that's going to go out consistently and catch 6 to 8 balls a game for 50 to 80 yards. He's a guy that's going to catch, you know, 1 or 2 passes and then won't do anything for 3 games. Then he'll catch 3 passes and put up 100 yards and a touchdown. And you're like, here he comes. Here comes Bryce Butler. And you and I talked about this. I can't remember what player it was. And it may have even been Bryce Butler when we talked about this. But there's a theory in terms of pro scouting that a lot of teams get caught up in a player that played really well against them. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Bryce Butler's best game, maybe of his career, but definitely of the last couple seasons, it was the Cowboys Monday night win over the Arizona Cardinals, where Butler had 2 catches, but just under 100 yards and a touchdown. And so when you look at that, you go, wow, this guy's the guy, you know, let me get my hands on him. That's exactly what he did against us. Let me get my hands on him. And then this 27-year-old, 6'3", 220 pounds, 220-pound receiver that ran a 4.37 40 coming out of college. I'm gonna turn him into a baller. And so maybe that happens. Maybe Butler just needs to get away from Dez Bryant, the Dallas Cowboys situation. There's been alleged drama within that team involving Butler, but let's be honest, it's the Dallas Cowboys. There's always some type of drama, right?
Absolutely.
And so the biggest thing for Butler for me is this. He's gotten better as a run blocker. And what have we heard kind of being the mantra from Steve Wilks since he was hired in January? We're going to run the football. So all of a sudden you got a guy, again, 6'3", 220, physical, can block. Not a great blocker. I mean, he's not going to be Michael Floyd. You know, and he's clearly not Larry Fitzgerald, but maybe getting with Larry Fitzgerald can improve that. And then the difference is all of a sudden now you run a play action where he's going to sell block. Again, he's a sub 4.4 guy at 6'3", 220. So then all of a sudden you talk about separation. You talk about the ability to extend the defense and play field. Again, I don't see this as their wide receiver two answer. I don't think this precludes them from continuing to pursue a wide receiver. We'll talk about that shortly, or draft a wide receiver, which we'll talk about shortly. But it does give them a body with some athletic talent to maybe take some pressure off the rest of the team.
And here's an interesting factoid about Butler for those, because he has all the physical traits that you want. And he certainly talks a big game, wants to be known as kind of a guy who can be a big, productive guy. At one of my sister sites, Cowboys Wire, the site editor there, KD, actually formerly of SB Nation's Cowboys sites, he described Butler as this. He will make three catches that no one else in the league can make and will wow you to heck. And then he'll drop a whole bunch. So it kind of sounds like a less productive Aaron Dobson type guy. Yeah. And the fact, here's the stat number that blew me away. For those expecting big numbers from Butler, you're probably going to be disappointed, because he hasn't cracked 350 receiving yards since high school. Not in any of his four seasons in college. So he was not a dominant receiver in college. He wasn't great at USC. His final year at San Diego State when he transferred, not great. And he hasn't been great since then. I mean, like we said, 317 yards this past season with Dallas was his career high in yards. Now, he can make game-changing plays, but it's clearly, I mean, at – when you're nearly 28 years old, you, as a receiver in the league, has been in the league 5 years. If we're expecting him to be a number two receiver now, I'll be perfectly honest. I'll keep things in perspective. Last year's number two receiver for the Cardinals, if we're excluding, because it was Jermaine Gresham was second on the team receptions with 33. Jerron Brown had 31 catches, so he was their number two receiver. What was it? J.J. Nelson had 29 and John Brown had 21. So I guess he could be the number two receiver, but.
Right. Because you're basically saying, like, hey, double your best season. And is that out of reach for a guy with his physical talents? No, it's definitely not. But as you said, you're expecting. I think that's probably the best word to use. If you're expecting that from Bryce Butler, you're likely going to be disappointed. So it's not saying that he can't. It's just that literally the last basically decade of him playing football, he's never done that. So, you know, opportunity cost, he went to USC. He had to go to San Diego State for his senior season. It's not like San Diego State's producing high-end wide receiver talent into the NFL. And then he was in Oakland with the kind of a in between the Carson Palmer and David Carr eras. And then he had his best seasons as a player in Dallas and with good quarterbacks and Tony Romo and Dak Prescott. It's just, he never took the step that his physical abilities should allow him to do. And so, you know, when you talk about it in that sense, again, I just don't think it's fair to expect more from him.
And with that, let's kind of wrap that up because we want to focus on the draft, but we are going to talk about receivers. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, on the next section, we will talk about receivers. We'll talk about the prospects at the top, prospects on day two, how do they fit for the Cardinals, and maybe even some late round day three sleepers. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red.
My wife and I went to a wine festival the other day, and the experience was wonderful. Tasting different wines from different vendors all over Arizona was a perfect way to spend a spring day, except for one little thing. I didn't get enough wine. Sure, you got enough taste, but really, sometimes you just want to sit back and enjoy a glass of wine. That's where Wink comes in. Wink, that's W-I-N-C, is the wine club for you. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. How? Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, then shipped right to your door. And that's all starting at just $13 a bottle. Even if you don't know a thing about wine, just that you like to drink it, Wink makes it easy because they do all the work for you. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask, or translate into a recommendation. Then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections will be. Each month, there are new delicious wines available to be sent to you. And the best part, there are no membership fees, and you can skip any month or cancel at any time. Shipping is covered, and best of all, if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/cred, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/cred for $20 off. trywink.com/SEERED.
We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. We're ready to talk draft. We're ready to talk about receivers. And considering the Cardinals, as of the moment, it isn't as if we can say on the roster that we really got anyone who we can point to say, yeah, that's our number two guy behind Larry Fitzgerald. Got Chad Williams, who needs to, honestly, based on what we say, he needs to step up and be that guy. You got Bryce Butler, who may be given the opportunity to do that. And then after that, you've got J.J. Nelson. We've seen what J.J. Nelson can do. He will have some really nice games, and then he will make you very angry. And then we've got a couple of guys, three guys on the roster that, you know, Kobe Hamilton, who's he? Nope, I don't know. Carlton Agudosi, really big, really tall, really fast for his size. But again, an undrafted guy who didn't produce in college. And then they also have Rashad Ross, former ASU guy, but more than anything, he's a return guy. Fast, but he will make more of an impact in the return game rather than probably as a receiver. So receiver is a big need that the Cardinals – I'm going to speak for Cardinals fans and say they have to address. They have to address it, and it probably should be a day one or day two, kind of like the quarterback thing. You kind of, because of the need they have a receiver, you almost have to go day one or day two, and if you go day three, then you're hodgepodging things. Now, of course, you can get guys that flash later on, but when you go day three, it's not a priority pick because if you've been following Cardswire at all the last few days, I've been running some stories about the history of this year's Cardinals picks, like number 254, which is the sixth round pick, number 182, and I've been looking at the last 5 years of picks at those particular selections. The history is not good. Now, I just got to going backwards to the compensatory third round pick. And what we're seeing is pretty much from their third round pick, their fourth round pick, their fifth round pick, their sixth round pick, and seventh round pick. Basically, you don't get impact players. You're lucky if you get someone that stays on the roster for his entire rookie contract. So that said, receiver probably has got to be a day one or day two deal. with that, let's talk about the guys at the top of the draft.
Right. And that's what the trouble is this year, kind of. And that's that how many of these guys are really day one prospects? So the names at the top and kind of the guys that have been lauded as the top guys, it starts with Calvin Ridley. So my buddy Justin, who I do the podcast with, he's a little more ageist than I am, if you would. But Calvin Ridley is going to be 24 when he begins playing professional football. And that's kind of old. Now it's not a death knell by any means. It's much more of an issue for quarterbacks. But Ridley is a 24-year-old rookie, and so that's always going to be a question that people have. Now with Ridley, he's been insanely productive since he stepped on campus in 2015, and he's as a true freshman, even though he was 21 years old, as a true freshman, you know, he put up 89 catches for over 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. And guess who his quarterback was that season? A guy by the name of Jake Coker. I don't know if Cardinals fans remember the Jake Coker era of the Arizona Cardinals preseason football, but Jess,
quarterback of the future. Quarterback of the future.
Jess and I do. And I always joke, Coker might have been the best passing quarterback Alabama's had. So, you know, it's not a knock on him. It is what it is. He's a nice player. I just don't know if you want him to be your 15th pick overall. So that's a guy, you know, when you look at his numbers, 6 foot, 190 pounds, shortish arms, you know, not big hands. He rose a 4.43 guy, but when we talk about size and speed, that's not exactly, you know, blowing it out of the water. And so you go to the next guy that's kind of, and I'm not saying these are just or my order. I'm just kind of going through a list I've got in front of me. So you go to the next guy that gets talked quite a bit, and that's Cortland Sutton out of SMU. So he's going to be 23 this year. So he's a year younger, but he's big, 6'3", 220 pounds. And he ran a 4.54 40. So here's the rub on Sutton, though. Okay. And so this is going to get kind of geeky for a second, so just bear with us, if you will. Calvin Ridley, again, 6 foot, 190 pounds, ran a 4.41 short shuttle and a 6.88 three cone. Okay, so those are good numbers for a receiver. Those are actually really respectable numbers for a receiver. Cortland Sutton, 3 inches taller and 30 pounds heavier, ran a 4.11 short shuttle and a 6.57 three cone. So basically what you're saying is, yes, Calvin Ridley is a faster person in a straight line, but Cortland Sutton's a faster player. He's quicker. He's able to get in and out of breaks better and at a quicker rate, change of directions better. And he's, oh, by the way, 3 inches taller, 30 pounds heavier. Now, all of that to say, I'm not saying that Sutton's going to be better than Calvin Ridley. What I'm saying is, if you're going to pick a guy 15th, and you're going to have to I am really anti wide receiver in the first round, but you're going to have to really, really sell me on a guy. It's going to be a guy like Sutton, who has a bigger body, is a all around athlete. That one technically is a redshirt freshman because he sat out his first season as a medical redshirt. He, caught 49 passes for 862 yards and 9 touchdowns. As a redshirt sophomore, 76 catches for over 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns. Last year, he had a bit of a drop off his final season, 68 catches, just under 1,100 yards, but 12 touchdowns. So you're talking about a guy that's outproduced Ridley, is bigger, and is slightly more athletic. So why not Ridley when he's perceived to be the top player at the wide receiver position in this draft? Well, because and when we use this term, we don't mean it in a disparaging way, but when you look at Ridley, you see a guy that lines up with a bunch of other guys. And so the term that gets thrown around is jag, just a guy. Like, what separates a wide receiver in terms of ability? When you look at Odell Beckham Jr., what separated Odell? His short area quickness, his leaping ability, right? When you look at a guy like Sammy Watkins, what separated Watkins? What made him the fourth overall pick? And then was it that much better than Odell? And I think most people in hindsight would have said no. And so that's kind of what the thing is here with Ridley, right? So you got Ridley at 6 foot, 119 or 190 pounds, excuse me. But then two guys, or actually three guys, and I'll just lump them in together right after him, that are looked at as kind of end of round one or in that round two range. DJ Moore out of Maryland, 6'2", 210, ran a 4.42 40. You have Anthony Miller out of Memphis, 5'11", 200 pounds. And then Arizona born and raised Texas A&M's Christian Kirk at 5'10", 200 pounds. So all those guys were in that low 4.4 range, right? They were all, but they're all kind of smaller in terms of wide receiver, 6 foot, 200 pound range. And so when you look at those guys, if you're going to sell me on Calvin Ridley at 15, it's going to have to be because he has a trump card. He has something that makes him that much better, that much more dynamic than a Christian Kirk, that makes him that much better than an Anthony Miller, that makes him that much better than a guy like Michael Gallup, excuse me, out of Colorado State, who's 6'1", 200 pounds. So all of those things take into account why looks to be the top wide receiver at 15. I'm not buying it. And I'm not saying that Ridley's going to be a bad player, that he's going to bust, or that in fact he won't be a wide receiver one. I'm not saying any of that. What I'm saying is it's not the sell. I'm not buying what he's selling. If you're going to take a big receiver, or going to take a receiver at 15, I don't want to be able to get a guy that's 80 to 90% of him, 60 picks later in round three. And I feel like with Ridley, that's what you're getting.
And it's kind of interesting is that, well, we've also, Seth has been very public about this. Why take a receiver in round one? Because it very rarely do you get someone that is so absolutely more talented. Larry Fitzgerald fits that bill. Odell Beckham, Julio Jones. But there are so few receivers that you can say is just elite talent across the board, has some elite trait or multiple elite traits about them. And that for me, this receiver craft, again, I don't see anyone special. There's no one special in this class. And an article that you shared on Twitter the other day from over on NFL.com from Matt Harmon, and it was giving some player comps and trying to match up the physical traits. And the player comps that a lot of these receiver prospects are getting aren't great. They're good. They're not great. For example, Calvin Ridley, the NFL comp was Greg Jennings. Okay, Greg Jennings was a really good player, was a fantastic player. But ideally, and maybe it's too high an expectation, when you – a receiver that you take in the first round, you want to be great. Now maybe it's just being spoiled from having Larry Fitzgerald here in Arizona like we've had. But Greg Jennings, I mean, would you be disappointed in having Greg Jennings for his career? Certainly not. But are there better difference-making players you could get at number 15, even perhaps one of the number five or even the number five quarterback, but he'd have a more of a greater impact in a career than a Calvin Ridley or than a Cortland Sutton. And by the way, the player comp for Cortland Sutton that comes up is Demaryius Thomas, who, by the way, had himself some really, really good years in the NFL. While Christian Kirk comes up with a player comp of Randall Cobb. He's not the biggest receiver. He's kind of built the same way as Cobb, has some of the same things. Well, the one thing that intrigues me about Christian Kirk is he's very, very public about his desire to. He doesn't want to be just a guy in the league. And while some people say that, some players will say that, it feels like he wants to be an impact player in the NFL. Now, the thing about these players at the top of the draft that I've talked about, Sutton seems to have the most elite athletic traits. The others are good, but take a Julio Jones. When you talk about an Alabama receiver that you take in the first round, the first person that's going to come to mind is Julio Jones. Calvin Ridley is definitely no Julio Jones. So in round one, obviously the Cardinals could go that route. Ridley is someone who many expect to go in the middle of round one. Christian Kirk is kind of all over, whether it's middle of the first round to somewhere in the middle of even the second. Cortland Sutton is another one, too. I've seen mocks in the middle of the first round to late second. And it's kind of interesting because it doesn't feel like it, and correct if I'm wrong, that there is no special receiver talent this year. We've got good to very good. We've got probably good receiver talent, but not special receiver talent in this class.
Yeah, and that's kind of the hardest part is as you were mentioning there, the mocks are all off. Outside of Ridley, there's not a consensus first rounder. You get DJ Moore from Maryland going in the first round to the late second. You get Cortland Sutton in the first round. I've seen Cortland Sutton as high as top 10, and then you get him going in the middle of the second round. So I think not only do people not agree on this receiver class, but more than that, I think they struggle with where to take them and where the NFL is going to take them. And that's really the hardest thing, right, is figuring out what the NFL is going to do, because if you have an idea of what the NFL thinks, you can typically hedge yourself, but maybe not in this class. There's two names I want to bring up that are day two locks, at least in my mind, that could be really intriguing fits for the Arizona Cardinals. The first one is Equanimeous St. Brown. Equanimeous St. Brown out of Notre Dame. So just under 6'5". Well, he's just under 6'5", ran a sub 4.5 40, but he's a big guy. Clearly, 6'5", you're a big guy. But one of the things that attracts me to him is when you watch him play, he kind of reminds me of Martavis Bryant. That was Harmon's cop. And that's something that, I've talked about with Justin a little bit with him is with St. Brown is, Martavis Bryant's kind of an alien when he's on the field, right? Because he's so big. And you hearken back to, and neither of these guys are in this class, so I don't want anybody to take this out of context, but you hearken back to watching Randy Moss play, because it doesn't make sense that a guy that's taller by 3+ inches than everybody else on the field out at wide receiver or corner is also skinny, but then somehow is running away from everybody. It just doesn't make sense. And that kind of is what Equanimeous St. Brown is. The problem is he's not consistent whatsoever. He's not a consistent player. So if you can get him at, pick whatever the third round pick is, I can't remember off the top of my head, 77, I believe, or something like that, 79. Or even better at 97, that would make sense. The other guy, and a guy I think you can get at 79 or 97, is DJ Chark. out of LSU. Yeah,
he's the perfect Bruce Arians receiver. And that's what's going to be different about this year is because we don't know what the Cardinals are going to do. What's their new profile with Bruce Arians? Seth had it documented for years and years. You were looking at someone under 6 foot with a sub-4.440. Without fail, that's where they drafted. They drafted him third round or later. We don't have that because Mike McCoy doesn't seem to have a – do we know if Mike McCoy has a player type? As I'm interested to see the type of physical profile of the receiver that the Cardinals bring in this year.
Yeah, that's going to – exactly, because we, like you said, we have no idea. But Chark's 6'3", just under 200 pounds, and he's improved every year. And again, he gets the LSU what's the word I'm looking for? Well, LSU sucks at receivers, at developing receivers. And you see it when they get to the NFL. Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, you're like, man, how did these guys struggle so much in college? And it's not that they struggled, it's that they had Zach Mettenberger or whoever was throwing to DJ Chark. I honestly don't even know who their quarterback was. So, you know, he's a guy that can do a number of different things. He had 40 catches, 874 yards, so just over 20 or just under 22 yards per reception and three touchdowns. But he had three other touchdowns, two punt returns. Hey, something the Cardinals could use, right? And then a rushing touchdown as well in an end around type of effort. Now, here's the other intriguing thing about Chark. What is LSU most known for offensively?
Leonard Fournette.
Well, yeah, but running the football, right? Yes, running, yes. being a team that runs the ball, that pounds the ball. Chark really saw numbers the last 2 years. 26 catches, just under 500 yards per reception, three touchdowns, and then last, like I said, or this past year, 40 catches, 874 yards, just under 22, three touchdowns. This is a guy that's come out of an offense that allegedly what Steve Wilks wants to be. Look at it from that perspective. You're like, huh, this guy really could make sense. So those are kind of the day one and two guys. I didn't even mention everybody, but this class is so hard to understand. You got players. So, you know, as I mentioned, you have Ridley and Anthony Miller, DJ Moore, Cortland Sutton, ESB and Christian Kirk, as well as DJ Chark, guys we didn't talk about, Michael Gallup out of Colorado State, one of their best prospects in a long time. James Washington, an intriguing player that I thought made Mason Rudolph look much better than he actually is. Dante Pettis out of Washington, a phenomenal athlete and return man. And then you have some bigger guys that have never quite lived up to the billing. Deshaun Hamilton out of Penn State, Deion Kane out of Clemson, and then kind of one more name just to remember, Marcel Aitman out of Oklahoma State. He's the other guy that made Mason Rudolph, in my opinion, look better than he was. And he is your prototype kind of big wide receiver, almost in the Ricky Seals-Jones class, 6'4" and a half, 220, but he's like a 4.6 guy. He's not fast. He's a post-up guy. He's a guy that's going to be able to box out and make plays. But those are really your day one and two receivers. And so we're talking about 15 deep. But the problem is, I don't know what the separation is from 1 to, you know, maybe 8 and then 9 to 15. And so when you look at it from that perspective, as we talked about kind of at the beginning, the Cardinals need to come away from the first 2 days with a wide receiver and not a guy like, you know, and I'm not throwing a name out here just to be rude, but, you know, not a guy like Jahleel Scott out of New Mexico State, right? Like, you don't want to come away with another Chad Williams. Chad Williams may turn out to be a fantastic receiver, but they, without a doubt, overpaid for what they've gotten out of Williams thus far.
And, you know, you look at this, I guess, I think it was Mike Mayock that described this class. It's a group of talented receivers, but they're not, they all fit particular rules. They do a few things well. So yeah, but what about guys that later in the draft? There's been some recent love for a guy like Jake Wynacki out of South Dakota State. Could he be this year's Cooper Kupp? Because he's got some size at 6'4", but he's not fast. But apparently he's a touchdown machine. What about another guy that has some, been compared to like a Danny Amendola, like a Miami's Braxton Berrios or Traquan Smith out of Central Florida? Any names on day three that are even worth a flyer that have some good ceiling, perhaps? They don't necessarily expect a whole lot, but can have a nice ceiling.
I think one name in particular that I think every fan should know, and it's going to be a hard sell, but is Antonio Callaway out of Florida. 5'11", 200-pound receiver, low 4.4, 4.4, 140. And his times at his pro day were kind of ridiculous. 4.12 and short shuttle, 6.99 three cone. He didn't play this year, so he was suspended. And like I said, so it's going to be a hard sell on Callaway, but his first 2 years at Florida, much like LSU, you kind of take these numbers with a grain of salt, but in 2 years at Florida, so freshman and sophomore year, 89 catches, just under 1,400 yards, 1,399 yards, and 7 touchdowns. He is an explosive, athletic freak and a mismatch with the ball in his hands. You just have to be comfortable pulling the trigger on that. I don't know if they would be. I don't know if they should be, to be completely honest. Another name to know, and they were at his pro day, Corey Robertson out of Southern Miss. He's kind of a big body slot guy. 6'1", 210. But he was slow, 4.56, 40, but he caught everything at Southern Miss this year. He had 76 catches for over 1,100 yards. That's not great, but like I said, he caught everything at Southern Miss. He was kind of their volume guy, kind of their Larry Fitzgerald, if you would, because he was doing so much without any help around him. when you look at the guys you mentioned, starting with Berrios, he's a guy that I've watched Miami quite a bit. He's your prototypical kind of undersized slot receiver. The question is, is he going to be closer to Cole Beasley, who's a very nice player, or is he going to be closer to kind of a guy like you said, Amendola, Edelman, Wes Welker type? And the hard part with these guys is always, at what cost do you pay for those guys, right? I believe all three of the guys from the Patriots were undrafted. Beasley was undrafted too, and then they drafted Ryan Switzer, the Cowboys did last year, in the fifth or sixth round to replace Beasley. So it's not like these guys are heavy investments. In fact, Berrios may be an undrafted free agent type that you look at. when you look at Wynacki, is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know. I would guess Wynacki, but I could be wrong. I mean, he went to South Dakota State. I have no idea.
When you look at him, his production is out of this world. Now, South Dakota State, it's not a D1 school. But when you look at his production, he had 59 touchdowns in his career, which is just unheard of. Staggering. I mean, he's 16 as a freshman, junior, and senior, and 11 as a sophomore. And in his year that he caught 11, it was his highest total yardage year. He had 72 catches for just under 1,500 yards. So when you look at Wynacki, the biggest thing with him is going to be can he play receiver in the pros? He's absolutely going to have to play in the slot. He's 6'4", 220 pounds. He ran a 4.67 at the combine. So not great, but maybe worse. And I've literally never seen this happen. At his pro day, he ran a 4.73. Usually that gets buried, right? Like, oh, you ran worse at your pro day? All right, well, we're just going to tie it. We're going to say it was a 4.62, right? So,
he's big, but he's also not strong since he, you know, he put up only 9 reps of the bench press. So he's 6'4", 220, slow and not, it doesn't give off the vibe that he's particularly physical.
Right, exactly. He's going to be a finesse slot guy, though he is 6'4". So you're going to want to – the biggest thing is you're going to want to – he's a guy that when you watch him play, it's kind of odd how he continually catches the ball. And it's almost frustrating to watch. But, you know, and this is not to take anything away from Larry Fitzgerald, who's the greatest receiver that I've been able to follow closely ever. I mean, just ever. And – but he kind of plays like Larry does now, but not you know, early Larry, but like 34-year-old Larry. And so, and I'm not trying to insult either person here, but that's kind of how when he plays, you're like,
we called Larry.
How is this guy? Hope. I was just going to say, you know, so when you look at the wide receiver class overall, it's just going to come back to what do the Cardinals value now? And like you said, we kind of don't know now. But the nice thing is from Calvin Ridley to Michael Gallup to even James Washington, there's not really that big of a disparity. And they're all similar build and size and style. Then you have your Cortland Suttons, your ESB, your DJ Chark. You have these guys that are your bigger, faster receivers. So, again, they're going to have kind of a choice to make, and they're going to have a bunch to choose from. It's a matter of what they want and who they choose.
And with that, we'll wrap up the talk about receivers. Coming up next on the Rise of Zero podcast, we're going to talk about tight ends, an area of game the Cardinals have not addressed this offseason. That's coming up next on Rise of Zero. A reminder to all of my listeners, all the listeners of the Rise of Zero podcast, we'd like to give a shout out to our friends over at Harrys.com. I've been talking about them for weeks. I think it might be months now, how I made the switch from the electric razor to the Harrys blade. I love the close shave it gives. I love the quality of the razor. I love the smell and the feel of the shaving gel. And I love that replacing the blades is very inexpensive. You get great blades, so you get a quality shave. Like even if you normally would go out and pay the top dollar for the razors, Harrys gives you a great shave at a fraction of the cost. Sell them directly over the internet. They can offer the blades at a price much lower than Lady Brad. You only pay $2 a blade compared to $4 or more from other guys. And so you can make the switch like 3 million other men have. And try Harrys, and we got a special offer. So there's a trial offer because obviously, if you're comfortable with a particular type of blade, it's not always easy to change. Change is tough when it comes to shaving. We have our habits, we have our things. So there's a trial offer. You can claim yours by going to Harrys.com/CRED. What it is you get the trial set. It comes with everything you need for the close, comfortable shave. You get the weighted ergonomic handle. You get the 5-blade razor. You get the fantastic shave gel. And you have a travel blade covered. And all you pay is, you know, you go get the, it's a $13 value that comes with everything. So listeners of the show, you can redeem the trial at harrys.com/CRED. Okay, again, make sure you go to harrys.com/CRED to redeem your offer, get that trial set, and let them know that I sent you to help support the show. We're back on the Rise of Zero podcast. Let's talk about tight ends. Not a particular great class, especially at the top. You might not say that this might this, but the tight end position is kind of interesting. The Cardinals have a need, and we don't know exactly what they want, but there's kind of a little bit of everything, is there not? Is there, first and foremost, anyone worth taking, even in the first round?
The one name that I like the best, and others don't agree necessarily with this, but Mike Gesicki out of Penn State, I think is he's your athletic freak of this draft. 6'5", 250 pounds, 4'5", 440, but he also has like the reach of a power forward. It's kind of ridiculous.
He's vertical of 41.5 inches. That's absurd.
Yeah. So he's just an athletic phenomenon.
And three cone just blew everyone away. It's almost a half a second faster than pretty much everyone. It's like a quarter second faster than everyone and half a second faster than a lot.
And the thing is people don't, you know, they act as though he can't block. Is he great at blocking? No, not at all. But he's put on 25 pounds since he was recruited to Penn State out of high school. He's improved every year, and he's a guy that is a legitimate, you know, three down weapon, whether it's in the run game or in the passing game. So he's a guy that can do a multitude of things for your team. I would take Gesicki in the late first. I don't think any other teams were. The kind of consensus top guys, and these guys flip, are Dallas Goedert out of South Dakota State, which makes you wonder how good their offense was if they had Winnecke and Goedert together, right? But then Hayden Hurst out of South Carolina. So both those guys are more of your prototype tight ends. So you could see either of those guys going in the late first round and being guys that kind of jump onto the scene. Here's the thing with the tight end class. You can sell me on going, you know, just kick the first round out because the tight ends aren't going to go in the first round. But say it did kick out the wide receivers in the first round option two. You can sell me on taking a Goedert or a Gesicki if one of them were to fall for some reason at 47. More than you could at taking a ESB that we just talked about or a guy like or even like a James Washington or a Michael Gallup at 47. So if you could get one of the top three prospects, Goedert, Hayden Hurst, or Gesicki at 47, I would jump all over that because it's a twofold thing. One, obviously the Cardinals have a huge need at it, but if you're getting a guy that can play two ways and be a guy that can, be involved in the passing game and the running game. I just think that's so valuable right now because they don't have one on the roster, and that's not a shot at Ricky Seals-Jones. I think he's going to be a nice kind of flex tight end that can match up. I just don't think he's going to be able to ever be efficient in the run game. So if you can add one of those guys and do that, then I think you could address wide receiver. Heck, you could double dip at wide receiver in the third round, and I don't think too many people will complain.
And for me, it's kind of is interesting to me. Obviously, they've got the Ricky Seals-Jones on the roster, and they seem really intrigued, the Cardinals doing him. You got Jermaine Gresham. I don't know how soon he'll be ready to go after the Achilles injury. But even I get caught up. And I've been saying this for a long time. The Cardinals have to do something to tight end. But yet, I look at some of the other things, and if I'm going to pick a round for position, I think round one, I think they got to go premier position, which is, you know, quarterback, tackle, corner, cornerback, maybe defensive line. Round two, you're looking at quarterback, receiver, corner. If I'm looking at the tight end position, I almost feel like I don't want to address it until round four because of the other premier positions. Now, if we're looking at day three, is there still some value? There are some names out there. There are some names on there they seem to be one or the other. They're either a pretty solid receiving guy, or they are more suited for the blocker who can catch the 6-yard pass.
One guy I really like is a kid out of Miami. His name is Chris Herndon. And I think he's a two-way tight end. I think he can do multiple things. So he's a little smaller than you're used to because he's only 6'3". And usually you see tight ends at minimum kind of 6'4", but he's bigger. He's 253. When you look at Herndon, he has a problem where he's coming off a knee issue, but he's a guy that he tore his MCL, not his ACL, his MCL in his left knee in November. So he's kind of coming out of, off that injury. But when you look at him, he's a guy that can block, he can catch, and he is kind of that intermediate guy at the position. I think you can get him in round four because of that discount with the injury concern coming out. The rest of this class, the guy that everybody knows that nobody wants to touch really is Troy Fumagalli out of Wisconsin, 6'5", 250, but I think he ran a Jess Root 40. I think it was like a 4.9. So he is our athletic ability, Jess. But he's kind of that just go, 5 yards, catch the ball, turn around, fall 2 yards and gain 7 yards every time you throw him the ball type of player. And he's a very solid blocker, obviously coming out of Wisconsin. He was a lead blocker in a number of sets. He's a guy I think you can get in round six or seven. I mean, it's just going to be one of those things of what you want him. One name to watch, and I watched a lot of him last year because of my buddy Justin, Marcus Baugh out of Ohio State. Again, an undersized guy, 6'3", but he's 250. And he was used almost like a fullback and an H-back by Ohio State in the run game. So job running and run blocking. But he is, again, athletically speaking, he is in our league, Jess. And then he followed that up with a 4.84, notoriously fast Ohio State pro day. So, but again, I think you can get a competent kind of two-way tight end. The problem being is this. I don't think you could go in with Marcus Baugh and Ricky Seals-Jones as your two guys, right? I think when you look at the Cardinals' needs, I think they have to find a way to either sign a tight end or bring in one of these top five. And so the consensus top five of this draft are the Goddard kid out of South Dakota State, and then Hurst. And then you have Gesicki, and then a kid out of Indiana, Ian Thomas, and then Mark Andrews, another local product, but went to Oklahoma. Those are your top five guys. They're all going to go in the first three rounds. And so if they don't sign somebody, I just don't know how they can go into this year with, day three draft pick tight end and Ricky Seals-Jones at their tight ends. I mean, they'll pick up somebody off the street, but it seems like a position that if they're really going to want to run the football consistently, that they're going to need to address.
And with that, let's wrap up the tight end talk. Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, we're going to talk about probably outside of receiver, the critical part that we want to see built up, and that's the offensive line. We'll talk offensive line, the big guys, on the next segment of the Rise of Seabed podcast. We're back on the Rise of Seabed podcast talking about offensive line, and this is a position, this is an area where we expect the Cardinals to make some selections because, they've got Andre Smith on a 2-year deal. They've got Mike Iupati left with 1 year left on his deal. A.Q. Shipley will be a free agent after this year. And yes, they've got Evan Bain, but he's only got 2 years left on his deal as well. DJ Humphreys, they haven't exercised his fifth-year option yet, or it hasn't been reported yet. So that's interesting. And maybe it's nothing, but there's not a lot of long-term stability on the line right now. And they want to run the football. They want to protect the quarterback. And we know that Steve Keim is willing to use draft capital on the offensive line. He's drafted a bunch of offensive linemen. He's used up top picks on the offensive line. So can we talk tackle? I know there's not a lot of optimism for some of the tackle talent in the draft. Will there be a tackle in play for the Cardinals at 15, perhaps?
One tackle in particular I think you could sell people on at 15. That's Mike McGlinchey. he's kind of the consensus top guy. Other people are going to say Connor Williams, the kid out of Texas, but McGlinchey has that kind of prototypical size, build, and way about him. He's 6'8", 315 pounds. He reminds me a little bit of Taylor Decker, the kid that just came out of Ohio State. Another name that is hearkening back quite a bit, but he kind of reminds me of John Runyon, the old Philadelphia Eagles right tackle. I think if you can 100% sell me on McGlinchey at 15, I don't know if I would agree with it, but you can sell me on it if that makes sense. And so, and when we talk about what they want to do, what's McGlinchey best at? Run blocking. So he makes sense in that vein. I like Connor Williams. I do. I think he's a very talented player. There's two things that worry me about Connor Williams. The first thing is that he's coming off an injury that made you concerned with his coming back. And then the other thing is he barely meets a lot of the like thresholds in terms of tackle play. He's a bit undersized at 290. I think he weighed in at like 296 pounds at the combine. But then he wasn't like overly athletic at the combine. So it wasn't that he's not a good enough prospect. I just don't know if you want to take him at 15. When you look at day two, this is where the Cardinals could make some hay on day two, because there's a plethora of players that I'm 100% bought into at the position. And that's because, you know, when you look at the tackle position, like you said, you have DJ Humphreys, but you only have him for 2018. You have Andre Smith, but it's basically a 1 year deal. And so when you look at it, you could draft one and then replace, you know, one of the two players. The first name that I like is actually Tyrell Cosby out of Oregon. So the 6'5", 320 pound Crosby is a tenacious run blocker. I mean, he's one of the better run blockers in this class, and he's a guy that has improved every season as a pass protector. It's hard to gauge these Oregon tackles. I'm not going to lie to you. It's hard to get a read on them as true pass blocking abilities. But I think Crosby is a guy that could be an extremely effective tackle on either side at the next level. The next guy, and I don't even know his name, I know his name, I just don't know if I'm going to pronounce it correctly, is the kid out of Western Michigan, maybe I'll try it. It's like something like Chumqua.
Chukwuma Okorafor.
Yeah, Chukwuma Okorafor. So again, another guy that improved every single season, got better every single season, and he is huge, 6'6", 330. I think he slots in really nicely at the right tackle position. I think he's a guy that can go up and play well at the next level and be a dominant type of physical, not only run blocker, but pass blocker. I think he did a really nice job in pass block, even though he is a bit of a big dude. And so I think he'll be able to hang at the next level outside. I don't think he'll have to move inside like some people are projecting for him. The other thing is he's got like vines for arms. He's got an 84 inch wingspan. He's not a super athletic guy, and I get that, but he moved okay in his short shuttle and three cone. He was sub 8 in his three cone, which is what was the death knell of our buddy Dorian Johnson coming out last year. So the last guy that I like is Brian O'Neill out of Pittsburgh. Another kind of smaller prospect than kind of what we're used to, but O'Neill is much more of an athlete than he is a mauler. So I'm interested to see, again, because we don't know. I'm interested to see what the Cardinals look for in terms of offensive line, because one of the things that we've noted under Steve Keim is that they've really looked at more athlete, right, than outside of Dorian Johnson last year, they've looked at athletes more than not. And if that continues, then I think O'Neill's a guy that could really be in play here. He kind of reminds people of Lane Johnson. He's not that talented, but you could find him in a spot at right tackle pretty quickly in the NFL. And he feels like a guy that could slot in at that 47 pick. And then, you know, maybe even earn a starting spot this year over Andre Smith, who would be a slightly expensive backup. But I guess if you've got if he's backing up O'Neill, then it's not that bad, right?
A couple other names out there, and I'm really kind of interested because one of the things that Steve Wilks has talked about is really kind of hitting on their late round guys, and he's bullish on Ray Brown, as you are as well, about his ability to coach guys up. A name that was really, really, really popular for a while, the combine made him disappear, and then his pro day was a little bit more respectable. You get a giant man in Orlando Brown at Oklahoma. Almost 6'8", 345 pounds, but slow, and also not particularly strong, but what he puts on tape is apparently really good. What do you see his prospects are in the pros? Probably not a left tackle, would you say, but how about as a right tackle?
I think he is a right tackle, and I think he's a guy that can, you know, kind of move over and be a kind of a difference maker on the right side, a guy you can slot in there to play right tackle that you can use as your kind of anchor on that side of the ball. He's going to struggle in pass protection early because he's just not athletic. But what he is ridiculously strong in terms of his hands. I know his bench press wasn't impressive. He upped it, like Jeff said, 18. His arms are so long at 35. He's got a better than 85-inch span guy that's kind of the guy he said fall in all the way to the end of the third round, and then you go, you know what, we're going to take the risk because I believe in Ray Brown so much. And so if you get him in here and Ray can keep him in shape, because that is the other thing that you have to be concerned of, is that he was up around 400 pounds when he was at Oklahoma. So if you do have to be slightly concerned with his weight, and there was a Cardinals player, Deuce is one, but there was another guy, I can't remember his name, and it was in the early 2000s or late 90s that was the same way, that kind of struggled with his weight. And so, but yeah, Deuce is another good example of that, where you're just talking about a guy that fluctuated so greatly from season to season in terms of weight. And in that way, you do have to be slightly concerned with him. One other kind of name to remember just on this that I kind of like, that has a nice athletic build, Brandon Parker out of North Carolina A&T, excuse me. He played basketball, and so he's kind of one of those guys that is athletic but doesn't time particularly well at the combine or anything like that. But he's a guy to kind of watch, and he would be like a round 6-7 type. And so when you look at it, I think they're going to have an opportunity to take a tackle somewhere early. The question is how early, and then who fits what Ray Brown wants, because you could get a steal in a guy like Orlando Brown, but you have to, like you said, you have to really trust what Ray Brown can do with him over the 100 red flags that accompany his horrific workout numbers.
And let's bring us to the interior now. And looking at that, do you see, if I can see the Cardinals taking a tackle in a guard or a tackle in a center, something in the interior and someone on the edge. If you had to guess, are you probably going to see them go day one, day two? You see them going high with a guard or a tackle, or doing guard tackle, like which combo? Tackle early, guard late, or guard early, tackle late?
This is the thing. So in this class, I think the guards are better than the tackles. So with the guards, you obviously have Quentin Nelson, who, I mean, if he for some reason is at 15, don't make the same mistake you made with David DeCastro. Just go draft him. Cut Mike Iupati then the next day. Like, thanks, Mike, for your time, but just bring him in, right? Like, build him or slot him in. But then you have guys like Isaiah Wynn, who played tackle or left tackle at Georgia the last year, but he's kind of a weird build. He's under 6'3", but he's 313 pounds. He's a dominant inside player. I think he's going to be a really talented player. Will Hernandez out of UTEP. Again, like, these are all guys I'm comfortable taking in the top 32. Like, I think they're all first round talents. And then you move on to kind of the second batch of guys, in Braden Smith out of Auburn. You got the kid out of Iowa who is a center, but you could move over and
James Daniels.
Thank you. I was thinking of Sean Walsh, who's their other guard.
I really like both Price and Daniels. I wouldn't mind seeing them. And the things that people say about them both is they're both plug and play players at really kind of any of the three interior spots.
Well, and the secret thing with Daniels is, and I know people are going to be concerned about Billy Price having torn his pec. And I don't even think it was a tear.
It was minor. He'll be ready by training camp.
And so, but here's the thing with both of these guys, right? They're both multi-positional starters for a lot of games. So Billy Price started 25 games at left guard, 16 games at right guard, and 14 games at center. When you look at, like, Frank Ragnow out of Arkansas, he started 18 games at center and 15 games at right guard. And then we go back to James Daniels. he was a little more consistent at center, 23 games at center, but 2 games at left guard. So these are all interior guys that can play multiple positions. Whereas, you know, the guys, the guards we talked about, the first set, Nelson, Wynn and Hernandez, those are really guard only. So when you look at what the Cardinals need, we don't necessarily know yet. Right. So do they need a guard or do they need a center? Well, wouldn't it be better just to be able to plug either guy in, right?
Yeah.
So yes. When you look at it from that perspective, Daniels and Price are going to be guys that you grab at 47. And then Frank Ragnow, the guy out of Arkansas that I just kind of briefly glossed over, he's a guy that I would 100% grab at 79 and laugh my way to the bank, because I think he's going to be a guy that can step in at center or guard and be a borderline kind of Pro Bowl all pro type. While Brett Bielema didn't do a ton of good things at Arkansas, he still produces really strong offensive linemen. And I think Ragnow is going to be that guy that is really strong. And then there's one more guy I would be remiss if I didn't mention, that's Mason Cole out of Michigan. So Cole was a left tackle as a freshman and sophomore, and then he played center as a junior, and then he played left tackle again as a senior. So he's a guy that has shown the athletic ability to be outside, but he's better inside. He's going to be at worst a center and at best a guard. But he, again, he comes from that Harbaugh offense where we have seen guys be really successful coming out of that offense because of their ability to play in both the pass and run game kind of straight ahead. So when you look at Iowa or James Daniels out of Iowa, Ragnow out of Arkansas, and then Cole out of Michigan, you've got a lot of kind of that quote unquote pro style offensive lineman. And one of the hardest things that the Cardinals have struggled with, and they'll, you know, admit this firsthand, is the learning curve that DJ Humphreys had as a tackle coming out of Florida, where he was playing in a spread offense that didn't ask him to get into a 3-point stance, that didn't ask him to block for 5 seconds like Bruce Arians' offense did. And that's why he struggled at times. And so when you look at it from that perspective, if you were to address the offensive line position, Nelson and Will Hernandez are the best two guards class regardless. But when you look at it from the perspective of a guy that's played left tackle, left guard, right guard, center, I think those guys and Ragnow and even Cole are guys that you could get on day two and I think would benefit. Now, again, if Nelson's there at 15, don't make the same mistake you made with David DeCastro.
Yes. For me, I've always been intrigued by the guys like Price and Daniels, because what we have on the Cardinals offensive line, you've got A.Q. Shipley with 1 year left on his contract. You've got Evan Bame, who was drafted by the BA regime. So, and we haven't seen him at center, so we don't know anything. So maybe they need a center. We also know that they have Mike Iupati and Justin Pugue, both of which who have missed a lot of games. So to have a guy, I don't even say he doesn't have to start this year. So whether it's Price, whether it's Daniels, whether it's Ragnow, you get a guy who can, if somebody gets hurt, which very well might happen at left guard or at right guard, they could step in and start and you'd be comfortable with them in year one. And then they can take over one of those three positions in year two. And that's one of the things. So I hope they go that route. I would love to see that work out. But yeah, that's kind of the route we're going. So late round, so Ragnow is a guy that I've seen in my simulations that I've run. He tends to go in like round five. Do you think he will end up ultimate being a day two guy, or will he fall and give someone great value later on?
Yeah, I think he's going to end up being in that late day two, early day three range where you see a lot of talented guys go, I think that's where he ends up going.
Okay, well, with that, let's wrap up the last segment of the Rise Up Seaway podcast, and we'll come back and we'll talk about the least talked about position with the Cardinals, and that's running back. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seaway. We're back on the Rise Up Seaway podcast. We're gonna gloss over the running back position because with David Johnson coming back, guess what? I mean, that's definitely not a priority. It would be a shock to me if they drafted anyone before day three. I would be shocked if they drafted a running back before day three.
I think you can make a case. I'm not saying do it. I think you can make a case to draft somebody in round three because you have that second, third round pick. But when you look at it from just a team building perspective, you could call it borderline negligence if you come out with a running back, even if they're as talented as a Ronald Jones or Sony Michel, in round two, say, and no tight end or no offensive line help or anything like that. And that is one of the problems is when you have as many issues as the Cardinals, you tend to be forced to bypass really talented players. And that's the thing with this running back class. There are some really talented players.
And Saquon Barkley, he's not going to be around. Darius Geis probably, I mean, he's might be around, probably going to be around for round one, but it would be silly to draft a running back round one when you've got David Johnson. So it seemed, again, that would be crazy. But wouldn't it be cool to have a 1-2 punch? Names that for me are kind of intriguing, being West Coast guy, seeing the Pac-12, seeing a San Diego State run all over Arizona State, because I'm a season ticket holder for my Sun Devils, Rashad Penny. I would love to get him. And I'm not sure where he's going to end up, but he would, because of his all-around skill set, people like Elijah Penny. And Elijah Penny is nothing near the talent that Rashad is.
Well, and so that's why I said, if you're sitting at 79, and Rashad Penny's on the board, I 100% support that. But it's the same thing if, for whatever reason, Sony Michel was sitting at 79, I would 100% support that. But I think you have to address other positions in the first two rounds. And then you can take a luxury pick with your first, third round pick, or you can take a quote-unquote reach pick with your second, third round pick. But I don't think you can do it before that. So when you look at this class, I think Penny is a guy that could be there at 79 that you can absolutely take. Royce Freeman out of Oregon, another guy that you and I are very familiar with watching a lot of ASU games. And he's a guy, I don't know about you, but I expected him to be so much more than what he was. And that's kind of absurd to say when you look at the numbers he put up in 2017. So in 2015, he put up over 1,800 yards rushing. Then he was under 1,000 in 2016. But then in 2017, he was just under 1,500 yards and over 6 yards a carry. And you're still kind of like, it wasn't what I expected. So Freeman's another guy that I think can would be a nice fit, again, on day three. I'm not talking about earlier than late day two. I'm not talking about anything earlier. A name we're all familiar with that I think if he was there in round four, you could talk me into it, would be Kalen Ballage.
I'm scared to death of him. I see the physical talent. I saw some of the good things at ASU. But then I saw his last season. I'm like, what in the world? Because he has every physical trait that you want. I mean, David Johnson-like, 6'1.5", 228, runs as 4.46 40. He's got a 33.5 vertical leap. He can catch the ball. He can block. But unlike David Johnson, who never had to run physically when he was at Northern Iowa, Kalen Ballage at one time was a physical runner and then stopped being one.
Yeah, and that's always a concern. It is. When you look and see a blog, when you talk about finding a backup, a quote-unquote backup, I think for David Johnson, he's a guy that makes sense because he, like you said, he has similar features. Never reached the level that David Johnson did, but he has similar features in the way he plays, and so I think he could be a good kind of doppelganger. You know, 5 to 8 carries a game, catch the ball out of the backfield, be a similar size where you don't have to dummy down or change the offense when they come in. Whereas we talked about a long time ago, Adrian Peterson staying on board. Well, if you put in Adrian Peterson, what's going to happen? Well, you're going to hand the ball to Adrian Peterson. Whereas Kalen Ballage is a guy that you could use in a similar role to David Johnson, just obviously at a scaled back. Another name that I like is Mark Walton out of Miami. And he's a guy that doesn't get talked about a whole lot because of just how deep and talented this class is. But 5'9", over 200 pounds, so he's kind of a small power back. He didn't get a ton of carries this year because of some injury issues. But last year as a sophomore, he had over 1,100 yards. This year, before the ankle injury, he was averaging over 7.5 yards per carry. So he's a extremely talented runner, and he can catch the ball out of the backfield. So again, when you're looking at running backs, I think the biggest key to this running back class is, can they catch out of the backfield? If they're kind of a downhill runner that doesn't offer anything else, you're talking about a guy that you can get in round 6 or 7 or as an undrafted free agent. They have to be a two-way running back that the Cardinals can plug in for David Johnson and not feel like they're going to give away anything or lose that much. I know that sounds absurd, but we're talking play-to-play. We're not talking about over the course of a game.
And with that, let's kind of wrap up the show. We've talked about the entire offensive side of the ball. Again, if you want to listen to quarterbacks, our last show has that. It has everything about all the quarterbacks you could ever want, and even me saying it just like I wrote about on Tuesday. You know, don't get caught up into this quarterback draft sleepers. They don't work out for the Cardinals. Head up RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Charlotte CardsWire.com. We both have pretty fantastic sites when it comes to Cardinals coverage. But with that, we'll wrap up this show. Next week, we'll be back. We'll talk about the defensive side of the ball. We're looking at the defensive prospects, where the Cardinals could use, who they could target, day one, day two, day three type prospects. That'll be our draft preview. They'll wrap up our prospect preview. Then we'll take a couple of weeks off, and the week of the draft, we will have our mock draft. Our first round mock draft, where we talk about who we think how we think that the first round will play off. And with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We will talk again next week. The Cardinals say Rise Up Red Sea. They also said Be Red Sea Red. We kind of put those two things together and we say Rise Up Sea Red.